All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Wednesday, June 6th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
And we have got a double slate of baseball action today, three or four early games, depending on kind of what site you're playing, and then a bunch of evening games following kind of a weird day in MLB. But we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. And as always, head over to the site and grab yourself a free three-day trial of our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. It's going to influence a lot of what we talk about here and kind of the decisions we make on a day-to-day basis. Free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month. After that, and you're all good to go. Like I said, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB, NFL when the season comes back around, NHL, it's all covered under NBA. It's all covered in the one subscription package. We don't section it off by provider or by sport or how some of these other content sites do it. We just kind of, we have it, you get it. It's all there. Free member chat as well. So dfsr.com/MLB will get you started. So we have three games on the early slate here. It's a weird early slate because kind of the pitching, I'm only going to count the 1 o'clock games, I guess, in what we're talking about for early, because that seems like how FanDuel and DraftKings have sectioned it off. They're not including these 3 o'clock ones. So so when we're talking early, I'm specifically talking about the ones that start in the 1 o'clock hour. And of those guys, I mean, I would call like maybe everyone but Chase Anderson is an above average or better pitcher going on the early slate. Would you agree? I mean, like Wheeler, Rourke, Carrasco, Bundy.
You have one glaring omission. I'm going to see if you can find it.
Oh, is it the Tampa Bay guy? I think I don't have him listed.
Yeah, Johnny Venters.
My bad. He's probably doing like the bullpen thing. So I don't know. I got to check that. Because now you can't.
Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, he has 14 relief appearances this year, no starts, 10 innings. But in those 14 appearances, a 5K per nine. So he's a guy to keep your eye on for sure.
Yeah, and then we're in like this new weird world order with the Rays, and probably other teams are going to follow suit. That just because a guy is starting does not mean that's the guy who is going to be we're going to see like kind of throughout. So this is one that requires checking some of the schedules. Like, you know, sometimes they'll take Yarbrough and throw him out. Sometimes you just don't know who they're going to pitch afterwards. So it's a little weird. It doesn't make things easier for sure having the Rays do stuff like this. And like I said, my feeling is that this is only going to keep going this direction, especially with teams. You know, you won't see it from the good teams that have three or four good pitchers on their staff. But for teams that have only one or two decent pitchers or guys,
why aren't the Orioles trying this? You know, like,
well, they might not even have. They don't even have any good bullpen guys. Like, they don't have any choice really. They just don't have anybody that can throw. So that's, it's not even like they're like, oh, this guy's great against righties, this guy's great against lefties. I don't think they have.
Tell that to the Mets, my friend.
So, no kidding. Alex Cobb had a no-no going. Among all the weird things that were happening yesterday, like Phillies hadn't scored six total runs in the last seven games, and they put up a five spot in three innings against Hendricks. Steven Wright, who you just blasted on the podcast yesterday, and I kind of agreed with you, was eight Ks through seven innings. I don't think he allowed any.
I was trying to light a fire under him, dude. If you couldn't tell that, I don't know how to save you at that point.
Scherzer
reverse jinxing him or whatever.
Scherzer was completely dominant. Kluber was dominant. So anyway, let's talk this early slate of games. So right now, I would call. It's a funny thing because we have Carrasco, who our system likes, sort of head and shoulders above the rest. I'm not sure how much I totally trust it, and I know, and I get these are the numbers that we've formulated through our own own inputs, because I ended up spending a little bit more time on guys like Bundy and Wheeler, mostly because I liked the matchup a little better. Where do you see like sort of the early slate pitching going for you? Are you trusting Carrasco? The K numbers are definitely down. Like, this is the lowest K numbers of his career, or at least over the last 4 years, at 8.64. I don't know. I don't totally trust it, and I get why the system likes it because of the money line, and we might also be a little high in this case.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I, generally speaking, prefer Carrasco over Bundy here. Yeah, the K numbers are down a little bit, but they're still almost a strikeout per nine. He's going deep into games, 6.5 innings per start, which is going to give you a nice high floor for your cash game purposes. The ERA is trailing the xFIP this year pretty considerably, but the 3.69 xFIP is only... it's less than a half a run worse than last year's xFIP, and he was just really good last year. And getting a pitcher with that kind of track record for these kind of prices, I think, is going to be a pretty appealing option, especially on FanDuel on a three-game slate. I do think Bundy represents reasonable competition here, I suppose, but I don't know. I mean, for that, you basically just have to trust. Basically, I think Bundy's sort of an upside play to me. You know, he's got the big K numbers, 83 strikeouts and 68 innings is excellent. He can blow up on you, but he also had a 14 strikeout game against Chicago. So, you know, I think Bundy, like I said, high upside guy, pretty significant downside. 2 games before that 14K start, he went gave up 7 earned runs and did get it, record a single out, right? So I think you know what you're getting with Bundy, which is sometimes good, sometimes bad. Carlos Carrasco is probably a little bit more consistent, probably not quite the same upside, but
yeah, Bundy's
kind of where I'm landing right now.
I know it's not fair to just like take a game off a guy's
that is not fair.
I know it's not, but
well, go ahead and take 2 games off them. You know, take off the 16K game as well, and maybe that actually is a more reasonable picture of what he's been this season.
I was gonna say, well, if you take out the complete game, 14K game, and you take out the zero inning 7-run game, this guy has been like an elite pitcher. Like, because that 7-run game is so terrible. It's actually it's way worse than the 9-inning game is good for his overall numbers. So I think, yeah, he just gets such a good matchup. I think I'm with you. I think the win expectancy for Carrasco probably wins the day here, but I think Bundy. It's funny that they are an underdog here because I think Bundy's just like the best. I know it's crazy to say this, like the best pitcher going on this early slate. And I get that he just has probably more blow potential than any other guy here. And the fact that he's a slight underdog has you taken a knock. One guy that our system is probably a little low on right now is Tanner Roark, only because there's no line on the Washington-Tampa Bay game. And that's probably because they were waiting to see who was going to be announced as starting pitcher. So I think once we get that line in, my guess it's something like, I don't know, Nationals -150, 8.5 favorite or something like that. Maybe a little bit more. 8.5 over under, -150 favorite. So, and I think when that happens, we're going to see, at least for our system's purposes, Roark's overall projection creep up some to make it close-ish on FanDuel, where he's $1,400 less than Carrasco. So
I think he also makes for a pretty, while we're on the subject, just a pretty good pitcher two option today. DraftKings, it's a little bit light over there. And yeah, you get the 340 games as well, but those don't actually bring a lot in the way of pitching. So I think you might see... Yeah, you might see some Roark action there as well.
Yeah, 8,300. He's just one of these guys. Like, this is a guy that you'd only really consider him when he's a decent favorite and the opponent is very bad. Because he's just like, you know, 7.5 Ks per nine, 3 walks per 9. He's just an average. He's a very definition of an average pitcher. This is just exactly what you look for when you're saying is just an average arm going out there every 5 days. And there's just going to be, you know, one out of every 3 of those starts is going to be a time where you consider him because of who he runs into with the matchup. So do have some interesting pitching. So I also don't even mind Zach Wheeler in this matchup here. Wheeler's been pretty good in his own right this season. He's not as bad as the 5 ERA would suggest. His xFIP is about actually more than a run lower. He's striking out more than a batter per 9. The walks have always been an issue for him. They do not look like they're going away anytime soon. But you get an Orioles team that just K's a lot. I don't know, have a lot of righty bats. They have their lefty bats strike out a lot. Yeah, they strike out 25% of the time against righties, and they rank fourth to last in OPS against righty pitching this year. So Wheeler's got a good matchup too. I think I can make a pretty strong case for almost every pitcher on the slate, especially for GPP, because all these guys have strikeout upside. All of them, pretty much to a man, have good matchups. And I think that's going to make the decisions pretty close. When we're looking at...
Yeah, I think we keep an eye on Wheeler too. He's a very interesting case for me because, you know, it's always... I think people get a little bit carried away when a sample size stretches out over multiple seasons, but that's still not multiple seasons worth of innings, if that makes sense. And so Wheeler, over the last 2 seasons, has had a .333 BABIP allowed. So a .333 batting average on balls in play allowed. That... You know, and you could look at him and be like, well, did he lose a step or two after returning from 2 years worth of injury? Not really. Like, he's actually generating about the same amount of hard contact, more soft contact this year than at any other time in his career, and it still hasn't turned into more out. So I actually do really expect things to turn for Wheeler, and I think he's pretty underpriced based on being able to get a strikeout per 9. Because the other thing too, it's kind of one of these cascading effects where if he's turning, you know, if he returns to like a historical .300 BABIP, he's going to go deeper into games as well, right? He's going to get in trouble less often. He's going to be throwing less pitches. So I think you could see a pretty significant uptick for Wheeler in the not too distant future.
Yeah, he's also struggled with left on base percentages. That's 68% this year. 67% this year. So
yeah, BABIP will do that, right?
Right. So when you combine BABIP with the left on base stuff, you know, just putting guys on the wrong spots and the wrong hits at the wrong time, you are, it's kind of everything is going. And I know those things are usually related to each other. So just because the higher BABIP, the more runs are going to score. But all, yeah, overall, it does look like he is due for some regression. Talk about, you know, when we talked this much about all, you know, maybe six decent, or you know, excuse me, four or five decent arms on a slate. If we're going to have to choose to stack guys against one of them, probably, right? Just because we're going to get crunched with price, especially considering guys like the Nationals and the Indians are kind of expensive across the board, and that we just can't double stack both those teams. Is there a team that strikes you as being a good value on the slate relative to their points per dollar?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you mentioned the Indians. I think they are actually a pretty good value today on a points per dollar basis. Because keep in mind, we don't have $12,000 to spend on any of these pitchers. So automatically, just by nature of this slate alone, especially on FanDuel, like you get a bunch of extra money to spend on hitting. And that means you can go and get, you know, Edwin Encarnacion or Francisco Lindor or some of these other higher priced options that normally you wouldn't consider on a bigger slate than this. So yeah, I'm definitely looking at Cleveland. I think I'm going to try and look at Washington as well once the Tampa Bay reveals more of their plans here. Like I mentioned, Johnny Venters is not a very good pitcher in general. You know, it kind of wreaks havoc on our system because we need to know we need to have a rough estimate of the handedness of the pitchers across the entire game to project accurately for platoon reasons. But I still think we can get some value there. And then, I mean, the last one our system is calling out, and I think I might already know your answer to this. It's still like some of these Mets guys, you know, yep. They're cheap. They're going against Dylan Bundy, who you like, but who has been shown to be erratic at times. Can we really stack the Mets against a guy with 10 plus Ks per nine just after seeing what they did against Cobb yesterday?
I think it's one of these spots where you just kind of rock in a hard place. If this was a main slate, we wouldn't even be talking about them. This game just shifted even to the tonight's 7 o'clock slate. I don't think they would even be in the conversation because there'd just be better options against worse arms. We are just kind of stuck on their prices a little bit. I mean, Cabrera, Frazier, Bruce, and Conforto specifically are all, they've all have signs of just kind of running bad this season. They all have good patient numbers. Like Conforto has a great walk rate. Frazier has a great walk rate. Even Bruce, we talked about yesterday, has a home run upside that we think is probably going to come back around. And yeah, this is also just not the spot where you feel all that excited about it, because it's just, you know, whenever you're dealing with a guy who can actually put guys down, they could just easily get shut out again. So I get why the system is calling them out on their price. It's really just for lack of other options. It's not because these guys are like overwhelming great spots tonight. I did think about that with Cobb last night. I thought they were like in a really good spot against a bad pitcher. That was proven wrong. That's not really informing my decision one way or the other on this matchup today, except that I still like the prices, and I don't really like their matchup. All right, well, let's talk about the evening slate. Hit us up with the sponsor first.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you guys about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is a great place to go if you want to play a different kind of daily fantasy sports contest. Basically, the way it works there is you just pick one single player that you think is going to have a big night, and then you pick someone you think your guy's going to beat. And it's really as easy as that. You can also go into the app and look through the bunch of challenges that everyone else in the app issues every single day. It's really a good spot to find daily fantasy value if you don't want to sit there for the full hour before lineup lock with me or Doug or Chris and work through all the nuances, try to figure out how to spend that last $100. Yeah, just a terrific app. And if you go and download it today, use the promo code DFSR, you get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit.
All right, we got some good stuff going here on the late slate. I got to start here by saying the FanDuel pricing on some of these pitchers is a total joke. There's no other way around it. It's criminally bad on how low some of these pitchers are, specifically Ohtani. Like Ohtani today comes in as, I'm pretty sure he's the biggest moneyline favorite. It's close between him and St. Louis, and we'll talk about them. Boston too. They're all kind of right in that -200 area. Ohtani, he's like 8,600 on FanDuel. What do you need to do to have this guy's price come up? I don't know. At least DraftKings makes it a little bit closer. They put him over 11,000. I still think he's a great value there. But at 8,600, it doesn't make any sense. Flaherty's the same way, honestly. Like Flaherty, if you just want to take a look at we've said this many times. If you want to take a look at where someone may or may not be mispriced, or where they may be a little too expensive, or if the truth is somewhere in the middle, you look at Flaherty's 10-2 on DraftKings, and he is like mid-7,000s on FanDuel, which is that's an average pitcher. I don't know, whatever. I was looking at this last night and I was like, this is crazy. So we'll talk about some of these guys and who we think we want to play. Know that it kind of doesn't matter who you play on FanDuel in terms of pitcher. You're just going to be able to roster bats basically above 3,000 or better. Exactly. So you're going
to... It's crazy. It's like even... For, I mean, we talked about this in the early slate, but the late slate too, there's just a real dearth of top tier pitching tonight.
Right. So, okay. So Otani's a huge favorite. Right now, he's striking out somewhere like 30% of the batters. I just had it in front of me, but now I lost it. Whatever. He's like 11.32 Ks per nine. The xFIP is down near three. Where do we want to put... The walks are around 3.5. It's like kind of his only problem. But he faces a Royals team that... doesn't really strike out at all. Like, they strike out less than 18% right. of the time against righty pitching. This lineup has been almost exactly the same all season long, so it's not like we're getting some other teams who get fluctuations in that number, which is why it's good for you know, a bird's eye view of a team, but really when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, you want to see what the actual lineup is. The Royals are one of these teams that they do throw up almost the exact same lineup every single night. So how much do we... Our system is dinging him, and it's still... He's still so clearly the top pitcher. How much do you get worried that the strikeout upside, though, is curved by a team that basically just weakly grounds out to everybody?
Well, yeah, you can get it both ways here because, yeah, certainly the matchup is less than ideal, and maybe for big tournament purposes, then you want to perhaps look in a different direction. But who else do you like to have more strikeout upside? I mean, there's certainly some guys, right? You mentioned Flaherty already, maybe Lance McCullers Jr., but I don't think either of those guys possesses the same floor that Otani does or the same pedigree. I actually think Flaherty is a really nice GPP pivot. But I think that overall, this is just one of those cases where it's going to look weird to take a guy in a less than ideal matchup, but when the price is just that wrong, you're just going to do it anyway, right? Like, you know, if Otani was facing the Yankees, but he was 6,000. You could talk about the matchup all you want, but that just ignores the most important feature, which is that he's just dramatically underpriced.
Yeah, and where the win is so important on FanDuel, and where he's is also mispriced, I think you can just take those win expectancy points and just translate them sort of onto this matchup for him, and I think he makes the clear cash game play. Now, in terms of strikeout upside, one guy I love, I wrote him up last night, John Gray is very good. There's just no other way around that. He is turning into a very, very good pitcher, and it's almost like park independent. He's actually been better at home this year than he's been on the road. His numbers are excellent overall for the entire season, 10.5 strikeouts per nine, less than right around 2.5 walks. The xFIP is about to dip. With one more good start, he could dip below three. The ERA is over 2.5 runs higher than the xFIP. Like, this guy has been excellent, but he's priced like a guy who has a 5.6 ERA and has more losses than wins, and those things can kind of confuse you. I mean, I think Gray, from a GPP standpoint, he's the guy that I would definitely go to away from Otani, just because I think he has a strikeout upside. Am I crazy for like this much love on him looking at some of these numbers? I mean, he's another guy that strikes me as completely mispriced, especially in DraftKings. Like, the fact that he's been kind of bad in these other luck-based things make me think that he's like by far the best value on DraftKings as a starting pitcher too.
Yeah, it's always hard to evaluate these Coors pitchers, right? So Gray this season, 7 games in Coors, 5 games elsewhere. That means that he's going to have by far, like among pitchers you'd actually consider playing on any given day, that's by far the worst set of parks you could basically have for a pitcher, right? And he only has, like, looking cursorily here, he's got 1 game in LA, 1 game in San Diego, and then everything else, or I'm sorry, 1 game in San Francisco, 1 game in San Diego, and then the rest are hitters parks as well. So yeah, Gray's had a really tough run so far, and that's going to turn it, especially in Coors, that's going to drive up your BABIP. That's going to increase the likelihood that you get long innings or, you know, just those games where you can't go deep into games. Because I think the real issue I had with Gray when I first looked at him was the innings pitch per start, right? It's just around 5, and that's really not where you want to be if you want anything remotely resembling safety. But that shouldn't be built into his resume, right? Like, we know that they will let him go 7 innings. He's gone 7 innings 3 times this year. It's just that when you're getting blown up, or, you know, getting those flat line drives that you can get in Coors that fall in, or, you know, the rockets off the bat or whatever. So I don't know. He's still a tough one for me to evaluate, because I do believe that ERA should come down. Will it come down to 3, or, you know, should it be better on the road? Like, there's kind of a lot of anomalies here. I think for cash games, I'd rather just play Otani, but yeah, the upside is undeniable.
Yeah, no, Otani for cash games on FanDuel for sure. I'm not making that, like, I'm not really willing to pivot to Gray in cash games for sure. But pairing them together on DraftKings, now look, he does have some of this Dylan Bundy stuff in him. He's got 3 games where he's gone 4 innings or less. If that's in your repertoire, it's in your repertoire. You know, you talk, and those weren't all Coors games. Actually, only one of them was a Coors game. The other two were in Arizona and in San Francisco. So if you have that in you, you just have it. So he can get wild. But a lot of these things, again, like these games where he got blown up, were not because he was walking the ballpark or anything like that. It was just because every ball was falling in, like BABIP's over 500 for these games. And I don't know, man. It just seems a lot to me like he just had so much bad luck. And this guy, his other numbers that we try to look at, Ks, strikeout to walk ratio, xFIP, this stuff really points to me like a pitcher who is bordering on elite and has had a very, very unlucky stretch. I'm happy to pair these two guys together.
Oh, definitely. I mean, on the slate, we're, and pitching's still at a premium here. I think he's an excellent play on DraftKings.
The other guy that's completely mispriced to me on FanDuel, and actually it doesn't even matter because when this many guys are mispriced, then they're just all priced this way, and then we just gotta figure out what to do, is Flaherty. Flaherty, 7,800 on FanDuel. He is, I think, over 10,000. He is 10-2 on DraftKings. Is a prospect, like was in, you know, a lot of top 50, top 100 prospect lists going into the season, so it's not like he's coming out of nowhere. The strikeouts are a little bit higher than almost any stop for him along the way in the minors, except for a brief stint in AAA before he got called up this year. I don't think he probably settles in at a 9.5 K per nine guy, but he also just gets to face Miami tonight. And when that's the case for you, he's a minus 200 favorite. Now the difference between Flaherty and Gray on DraftKings is roughly $3,000 difference. Does the park, because like Cincinnati is not a good park. That's where Gray. Yeah, that's like, right. So like, what do you want to, like, what do we do here with Flaherty? Like, is it worth to pay up over like 3,000 more than Gray? Like, I'm in love with Gray here, but I don't know. Flaherty's got a better matchup, better park. His numbers have been very, very good. He's got better win points. He's like a minus 200 favorite. For a starting pitcher two on DraftKings, is it worth pivoting to him and just paying slightly more, maybe for some more safety?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. Like at first blush, I think there's enough payoffs. So like you have games with a 10 plus total again today. And, you know, Otani's expensive enough to where I think the savings wind up mattering by pairing him with Gray. So I think I'd rather go with Gray. I think there's some chance Gray is just a better pitcher than Flaherty straight up because the track record on him is significantly longer than the one on Flaherty. So I think for those reasons, I'd prefer to take the savings on a guy who might be just as good. But I mean, you could certainly make a case for it. I don't think it's crazy. And I certainly think it's worth continuing to monitor the line and see which direction it moves.
All right. After these three guys, and I think these are by far and away the three best values relative to lease prices on both sites. Any other pitchers? There are some other good above average arms going here today. Guys like Jose Quintana against the Phillies, Eduardo Rodriguez. I mean, he's probably not in the same class exactly. Aaron Nola has been excellent at times this season. He faces the Cubs. Where do you kind of rank these guys? I don't think we're going to go here for cash, but maybe for GPP, is there a guy that you can pivot to? Because each of these guys in their own respect have upside. I don't really like the matchup on paper for safety and cash, but I don't know. It wouldn't shock me to see any one of these three guys or maybe someone else in a tournament winning lineup just because of the pedigree they have.
Yeah, I mean, I think for starters, Quintana, actually the line came in while we were recording, and that line's at 7.5 with Quintana as a minus 131 favorite. So we actually might see him creeping into some DraftKings lineups. He's just 1,300 more than John Gray. You know, he's got a really, really good matchup with the Phillies, but as we saw with Hendricks last night, that doesn't always turn into fantasy success. So what do you think about Quintana just straight up versus Gray here?
I hate these like weather-driven run lines Wrigley more than anything else, because that's usually what I think they are. Like when the wind is blowing in or there's not much wind, these lines I think sometimes get artificially depressed or pumped up just because, one, the Cubs are a public team. This is like sort of
this, and that's a public concept, right? Which way the wind is blowing in Wrigley or whatever.
And like, right, exactly. This is something that even the most, you know, lay baseball fan understands or at least like tunes into. So I always get a little bit spooked by that. I'd still probably prefer Gray just because Quintana's had his own issues with just walks at times of the season. This guy's walked like he's a classic version of, I have a short list of guys that if I'm ever rostering them, there's just no possible way I can ever turn the game on and watch because like there's just too many balls that are just touching the edges of the strike zone. Quintana and just the walks and all the counts go deep. Like Quintana's like this, Maeda's like this, Darvish is like the king of this. These guys that just kind of fall into this category of nibblers. I don't know another way to put it, but I think that's probably where I land, and I always get a little worried when I see the run lines. And what about guys like Nola? Anyone else here that even kind of would be on your radar as a maybe low-owned GPP pivot?
Yeah, I think Nola is the one that comes to mind. You know, if you trust the weather-based lines, that is a really low line in that game. Nola does have K upside. I think you know, you mentioned this being a fairly deep slate for pitching. It's actually a pretty deep slate for terrible pitching as well. So I don't really see a lot of other guys that I'm going to be targeting too heavily outside of the ones already mentioned. And we mentioned, to be fair, I guess a lot of them. McCullers is another guy who Vegas likes probably for more strikeouts and fewer runs allowed than guys like Flaherty and some of these other options. So he probably should be on some radars as well. But yeah, I think all in all, the pitching to me feels a little bit clear cut. And I'm mostly licking my chops at all these excellent offensive options.
By the way, the Nationals line just came in too. It was -188.5. So it was close. I said -158.5. Like when I'm
not kinda, even close.
Like when I'm close about that stuff. This is definitely a haves or have not pitching slate here, because there are some true bums taking the mound that we can probably consider stacking against. Is there? I have a list of four or five of them. I suspect our lists are pretty close to each other. Is there a guy that you want to specifically stack against in cash tonight that stands, I was gonna say, head and shoulders lower than everybody else, because again, there are some really bad guys going?
Yeah, I think, well, the one game that draws my eye, and you know, this is going to be similar to last night too, is this Oakland Texas game. I mean, have you ever, this is like just a general curiosity that I have, because I know you've looked at these, you look at these lines every single day, probably more closely even than I do, but we have right now a 10.5 total in the Oakland Texas game. That's basically a pick 'em as far as Vegas is concerned. And that is so unusual. I mean, first of all, to get those lines over 10 outside of Coors is already very strange. But to have a game with a 10.5 and a pick 'em, like usually you get these lines when it's like, you know, you're in Coors and there's like one terrible pitcher. But I don't know. For some reason, that just makes me laugh a little bit. And that's going to mean that both the Oakland and Texas sides against these two terrible righties are going to look pretty darn attractive tonight.
Yeah, that's, and this came, this was bet pretty quickly going back the other way, which is interesting to see that happen this early in the day. Like, you know, lines generally have a lot of movement very early and very late, so like, you know, we'll sit for long periods of time during the day with the line not really moving after it's done its initial, hey, did someone screw up this did someone screw up the initial look at this, like, and that's sure what it looks like it appears to have happened with Oakland, because it started with Oakland -130. Basically, they were getting, I don't know, they were getting a half a run to 0.75 more runs than Texas, and that instantly shot back all the way up to take, and nothing on the Oakland side, almost all on the Texas side. I always find that to be interesting. It makes a lot of sense to me, at least from the Oakland side, why they're set at 5.5 runs, because Bartolo Colon is completely garbage. I don't know. I get that he's had a quote-unquote success this year because the ERA is a little lower there, and even in the XFIP is a
Mangdon's case too. Is the same way too. Mangdon and Colon are kind of eerily similar looking tonight, so I understand why this game is a pick 'em. But yeah, the sub 6K rates, pretty low walk rates. Mangdon's also running a run better in his ERA than he is in his XFIP. Both just looks like bandbox batting practice, home run derby style pitching waiting to unfold. And I don't know, maybe I'm getting excited for this game after all.
I mean, Mangdon's one of these guys, it's one of these, where does it normalize, right? Because he's got 111 innings of 240 BABIP, right? Like, so when it does, if it come back up, like, I don't know. Like, there are guys that can live in these lower BABIP zones, especially if you're a heavy ground ball pitcher. He's not. Like, I don't know. Or excuse me, if you're a heavy fly ball pitcher. He is kind of nothing. He's kind of a heavy line drive pitcher, because he seems to let up a lot of, like, pretty good contact. And that strikes me as a guy that who is not going to just be able to support a completely elite outlier BABIP. And then we have Colon, who his BABIP's 228 against. Nothing about him is different than last year, except that he's walking a few less guys. And this is a guy who last year had a 6.5 ERA, 5 XFIP. It makes a lot of sense why this line has shot up. I think we're going to see, our system is not completely accounted for yet because this late line movement. But I think can definitely see double stacking this game. But then you have guys, I don't know, safety in terms of cash games to the Twins. For me, the Twins are right up there with the teams we just mentioned.
Oh yeah, I mean, Santiago, he's just not even messing around right now. The five plus walks per nine, 2+ home runs per nine. The guy can't make it through just a quality start. It seems like probably for the whole course of the season. I think our time is limited in terms of getting access to Hector Santiago starts, and I'd like to be cashing in as soon as possible. So yeah, I'll certainly be prioritizing him. But I also think on nights like tonight, there's actually less urgency around which stacks you wind up landing on. And I guess I'll explain why for a second. It's just because there's so many good spots to pick from, right? So like, you can pick and choose, right? Grab Dozier and Sano against Santiago. You can grab a few different Oakland guys and flesh out your lineup against Bartolo Colon. You know, maybe grab the lefties or guys like Chris Davis, for whom the strikeout can be an issue, but if you're just going to be throwing batting practice anyway, he can certainly bruise you a little bit, right? So I think you can actually, it's kind of like the same corollary when there's a number of really, really good pitchers. There are a number of great hitters that you can pick from tonight, and it's going to be tough to get it too, too wrong as long as you don't go completely off board. Much different would be if we had like one game, say the Oakland-Texas game, and then a ton of really average pitchers. You'd really need to bend over backwards to prioritize the good game. But on a night with so many good options, I think it actually just increases the variance more than anything else because it's going to be tough for your opponents to go wrong. And really prioritizing a certain team is going to be more an effort of trying to hit the chalk if that's a priority for you rather than trying to actually increase your expectation by that much.
Yeah, right now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams on the late slate that are that have five or more implied runs coming out of Vegas. That is, especially considering
that
it's not even a full slate because we have so many early games going. That is a ton in terms of percentage of teams that are expected to put up runs. In situations like this, I think it's totally fine to just like double stack your cash games and just run a bunch of different, like, you know, you do your Oakland, Minnesota double stack for a cash game. And if you're like me and you want to run maybe a couple different cash lineups, you just kind of with GBP upside as well, you choose how to just mix and match these teams and then kind of pile them all together because they're all just in such great spots. I mean, the last guy that I was going to mention here, just in terms of teams that you can stack against, Wei and Chen gets the pretty righty heavy Cardinals going here. Chen is walking almost 5 batters per 9, strikes out less than 7. He's almost like a Hector Santiago clone in that he just sucks. Like, I don't really know. Like, I just don't know. There's just no other way to put it. This guy is flat out terrible this season.
I like that you were trying to put it delicately and then you just gave up.
Why search for the word when the perfect word exists? And he sucks. Yeah, and you got guys like Pham. Ozuna is still very much underpriced on DraftKings, where he was running bad at the beginning of the season, but the power numbers are starting to creep back up. Even Dexter Fowler, he's been much better against lefties for his career. He's coming very, very cheap because he's been stone cold terrible this season as well. But he's coming very cheap and he's still in the lineup. And again, he's a switch hitter, but better against lefties. So a lot of different ways to go today. A lot of good pitching. I like when days kind of shape up like this because I like when there's sort of clear cut pitching options for me. And then very, very clear-cut hitting options just because of the bad pitchers. We're going to get out of here running a little late. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com/MLB gets you that free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good, 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 good friends over at LineupLab.com.
May our best friends.
Our best friends. There you go. So anyway, we'll be back again Friday talking a full slate of Friday baseball. Buddy, enjoy your Wednesday.
Later, dude.